This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart, for a healthier you. Smile Generation. Trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you, committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with confidence unleashed.
Baseball's all about the games, and the best in daily gaming is on the MLB app, where every day starts with new puzzles and challenges. Test your skills with MLB Pickle, the ultimate mystery player challenge, and Immaculate Grid, where stats and strategy collide. Or chase the $5.6 million jackpot and beat the streak, presented by BetMGM. And for an all-new spin on fantasy sports, there's Spinball, the game's official home for games, is on the MLB app. MLB trademarks used with permission. No purchase necessary. Restrictions apply. For official rules, go to MLB.com/play/official rules.
It's going to be hot today. It's going to be humid. Maybe a chance for a shower. It's summertime. What are you going to do? 6:14 now. Tommy Tucker, WWR, on this Friday, 7-11. And I called it National Casino Day, so go out and, you know, bet your paycheck. Just kidding. 6:14 now. Let's talk to David Schultz, our professor of political science at Hamline University. How you doing, David?
Great, and I hope you're well today.
I am. Do you do any gambling at all? Any sports betting? Any casino gaming? Anything like that?
I don't. I used to like go to like some of the like raffles and stuff like that, you know, or 50-50s for charity. But outside of that, I'm not into that.
I drive in New Orleans traffic. I figure that's gamble enough, you know?
Okay. Yeah.
Let's talk about what's going on with President Trump's birthright citizenship order. I know you are a professor of law as well as political science at Hamline University. And I got to tell you, man, it can get so terribly confusing with a court says the president wants this, then the court says that, then the other court overturns this, and the other court upholds what was overturned. So I'm just trying to figure out, can we or can't we?
Well, let me explain what just happened yesterday in a decision, or actually a couple weeks ago. The U.S. Supreme Court said that district courts don't have the authority to issue nationwide injunctions. They can basically to halt certain kinds of action, including this case, presidential executive orders. But the court then said, except for traditional exceptions or when necessary. And one of those traditional exceptions is what's called a class action lawsuit. And what happened yesterday is that a federal judge in New Hampshire issued a temporary injunction after he certified a class of individuals, that is all individuals who may be affected by the executive order. And so what he did was to basically say, we think under the federal rules of civil procedure, which were adopted by the Supreme Court many, many years ago, we think you can proceed and be able to bring a call to class action lawsuit. And in the process, we're going to issue an injunction halting the president's action. And just briefly, in case people are wondering, I came up with a small list of famous class action lawsuits in the past, in case people are wondering here. These involve, for example, the tobacco settlement many, many years ago. Also, take us way back for people who are maybe Vietnam War veterans out there, the Agent Orange lawsuit, then lawsuits involving the opioid manufacturers, the Deepwater Horizon for pollution, a whole bunch of them. And the whole purpose of class action lawsuits is that it may not be profitable for me to bring a case because it'll be so expensive, but it would make more sense for a group of people to get together to bring it together and also make it easier for the courts to handle lots of lawsuits. I mean, think about back when it was the tobacco settlement, there were literally millions of people who were suing, you know, the tobacco industry, you know, for false claims, et cetera, et cetera. having each of these individual cases proceed would have just literally shut the entire system down.
So those were civil actions. This is a constitutional action? That's where I'm confused, David.
Yeah. Technically, a constitutional question is actually considered to be a constitutional tort or claiming some kind of civil wrong against you know being perpetuated or being brought by the U.S. government. Now it is a little unusual, but again, in terms of bringing a class action against the U.S. government. And that may be one of the issues that we have to think about here. But when I went back and looked at my rules of civil procedure for how to bring cases in federal court, I didn't see anything in those rules that precluded bringing a class action against the United States government.
So tell me how this relates to the Supreme Court last month talking about courts issuing nationwide injunctions, because I'm a little bit confused about that, too.
Okay, so what this – so. Again, last month, what the court said is generally, you know, in a case of, let's say, Smith against the United States, you know, let's make up a hypothetical case like that, an injunction could be issued only to address Smith and the United States, not all the other lawsuits in the country.
That's what the judge said last month.
That's what the court said last month. But then the Supreme Court said that however, nationwide injunctions still could be used when, and they use the phrase when necessary or under certain circumstances when they're necessary or with traditional exceptions under the law. And so the court didn't completely say unequivocally no, can never ever use them, but narrowed their use. One of the things that the court left open last month was to say, well, it could be the case that in some situations, nationwide injunctions apply or could be used in the case of class actions. And that's exactly what the judge in New Hampshire did yesterday, is to say that a case is being brought again. I can't think of the name of the person. I'm just going to make up a name again. Smith is suing the United States, you know, on the birthright citizenship at this point. There are many, many other people out there who are legally similarly situated. We're going to issue a class action, allow them to proceed together, consolidate all the cases together from across the country, and consistent with what he thinks is the opinion from last month and federal rules of civil procedure, allow a class action suit to go forward.
So the judge said, the U.S. District Judge Joseph LaPlante said, based on what the Supreme Court said last month, I am going to issue a nationwide injunction because, but at what point did it, let me take a break, we'll pick it up when we come back. Uh-huh. At what point did this become a class? Because I thought the attorneys, the plaintiff's attorneys had to make it a class action lawsuit, but I guess we're getting into the weeds here, but it's kind of important, and then we'll find out ultimately what happens with birthright citizenship. Where do we stand on that? 6:20, it can get a little bit confusing. Bear with us early on a Friday morning. David Schultz, our guest, professor of political science at Hamline University. Ultimately, I guess it's going to be determined whether or not if you're born in the United States, you are a U.S. citizen, and that goes back to an amendment that had to deal with slavery, as I understand it. But David Schultz, take us through all that, professor of political science and law at Hamline University, 6:20, traffic now, WWL. 6:25, Tommy Tucker, WWL, back with a friend, David Schultz, professor of political science and law at Hamline University, trying to figure out what's going on with birthright citizenship. So the judge, a district judge, based on the Supreme Court ruling, said, okay, I am able to stop this as a district court judge and issue an injunction, a national injunction, because this is a class action lawsuit. David, did I hurt myself or is that accurate?
That's pretty accurate. I'll add one more thing. The judge just can't sort of declare class action lawsuit. There's a set of rules and procedures that are outlined in what's called the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure that basically say that a group wanting to argue that they're part of a class has to meet certain types of requirements, has to be able to meet a whole bunch of legal requirements. And so a group approached the judge and said, all right, we would like to pursue this as a class. We would like you to, quote, certify individuals who have birthright citizenship in certain categories here to be a class so that we can proceed.
The plaintiff's attorney says that?
Yes. Yes. The plaintiff's attorney has to
because at some point you got to get everybody signed up together here or something, or get them to, because you get with class action lawsuits occasionally you get a little postcard saying,
yes,
you know, this, that, the other thing, right? So that's what we're talking about or not?
Yeah, we are. I was going to say, for anybody out there who's ever gotten them, I was thinking in terms of, like, without mentioning the company, you know, there's some big computer company we've all probably gotten, like, that postcard in the mail, or you know, from some health insurance company or something like that. Yeah, I mean, that's what it is. And so you'll be eventually notified. We don't always know everybody who's in a class. But my main point is that the judge couldn't do it on his own. The plaintiffs had to argue. They had to meet certain rules under federal rules of civil procedure. He then said, okay, it's a class. Then the plaintiff said, we would like an injunction to halt or put on hold the executive order pending the class action lawsuit.
So when it comes to class action lawsuits like BP Horizon or tobacco or what have you, sometimes, you know, we sign up, or big computer companies, and we wind up getting a check for like 12 cents or something like that.
Right.
In this case,
right,
I don't think they're looking for damages. But when it comes to the attorneys that are handling these cases, the attorneys are in it for the money. When it comes to big tobacco, who's going to handle this case for citizenship? And are there any, when it comes to resources, the federal government has unlimited resources. When it comes to this kind of thing, are there legal firms or lawyers interested in taking this on for the civil rights part of it, no matter how much it costs?
I suspect there is. I think the answer is we will find anywhere from the American Civil Liberties Union to probably several big law firms around the country who will be willing to take this on. Because you're right, this is not like when we're suing the drug manufacturers or the tobacco industry, where there's lots of money to be made in this. There's not going to be money to be made in this one whatsoever. So
there's no cheese at the end of the tunnel. The only cheese is a determination on whether or not. Give me the birthright citizenship argument, David, to wrap this up, if we can, just so people understand what it is that the discussion is about.
Well, what the discussion is whether or not individuals who are abroad, who came to the United States when their parents came illegally into the United States, but they are now born in the United States, does the 14th Amendment, Section 1, apply to them and guarantee that they are U.S. citizens? The plain language of the text, as well as past Supreme Court decisions, says they are U.S. citizens.
The 14th Amendment was originally designed, or Article A, whatever it is you're referring to, as a result of slavery, to make former slaves American citizens, accurate or not?
Absolutely accurate, yes. And so you wouldn't have a situation where also some people were from slave states and then they moved to a free state, or a free state to slave state. It basically guarantees if you're born in the United States, you are a U.S. citizen.
And the question is, does that standard...
Can the president issue an executive order basically overturning the birthright citizenship?
So does this class action suit determine the president's authority, or does it determine what the 14th Amendment means?
A little bit of both, but I think it's probably closer to the president's authority.
Okay. Thank you, David. Very complicated stuff, but you made it understandable. You should be a professor. Teaches stuff for a living. Professor of political science and law at Hamline University. We're going to take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk to Corey Graff, curator and restoration manager for the National World War II Museum, about the USS New Orleans, the role it played in World War II, the heroism involved. It's an amazing story. You'll hear it when we come back. 6:30, time now, WWL First News. 6:44, 16 till 7, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Reading from a NOLA.com story here from Mark Ballard. On a dark night with no moon and heavily overcast skies on November 30th, 1942, the USS New Orleans was one of 11 cruisers and destroyers sailing in formation in the waters near the Solomon Islands in the South Pacific Ocean. With that being said, I'm going to stop and introduce Corey Graff, curator and restoration manager for the National World War II Museum, to talk about the USS New Orleans, what's recently happened, and what's going to happen at the National World War II Museum. Good morning, Corey. How are you?
Doing all right. How are you doing?
I'm all right, sir. Corey's on the West Coast. He got up early to join us, and we do appreciate this. Corey, tell me, and I started purposely reading that paragraph because I want you to take us to the USS New Orleans, a little bit history of the ship, and what happened that night near the Solomon Islands in the South Pacific Ocean. Then we'll get to the future. We'll go into the future and what happened recently and the future exhibit and so forth.
Yeah, the USS New Orleans was built actually in Brooklyn, of all things, but it still had that New Orleans flair. Instead of using champagne, they christened the ship with a bottle of Mississippi River water.
Really?
And it launched in it launched in 1933 and was part of the U.S. fleet. Of course, it was everywhere during the war in the Pacific. It was at Pearl Harbor. It was at Coral Sea. It was at Midway. And then we get to that night off of Guadalcanal. It was near Tassafaronga on that evening, and they were intercepting a Japanese supply convoy that was coming ashore trying to supply the Japanese troops on Guadalcanal, and the Japanese destroyers fired a big fan of torpedoes at the U.S. ship, and one of them hit the front end, the bow section of the New Orleans, and exploded. They were quite potent long-range torpedoes, and it amazingly enough blew the bow off of the ship, and the New Orleans didn't sink. It still had a lot of history left to go, but it left that bow way underwater in what they call Iron Bottom Sound off of Guadalcanal.
And the ammunition was stored in the front of the ship. Is that what I understand? Is that where the torpedo hit, which made it even worse?
That's right. It hit the forward magazine. One of the things on combat ships, you don't want to have all your ammunition in an area that's easily approached by airplanes and torpedoes, but down below they have all the storage, and it hit the storage and the ammunition for turrets 1 and 2 and exploded, just cleaved the bow completely off. 183 sailors actually were in that front section of the ship, including turret 1, which also fell into the water, and they perished that night, but the ship stayed afloat. It actually limped back to a place called Tulagi at like 1.5 knots, and they pulled it in really close to the shore because they were fairly certain it was going to sink at any moment, and started working on recovering the ship and bringing it back to life.
So I got a little, you know, hand drawing here of a ship with a straight horizontal stern and an angled bow, right? So if I were to go back about how far on this diagram, a third of the way when the bow that came off, a fourth of the way, about how far up did the bow fall? Do you have any idea or come off?
Yeah, about a third or fourth of the way. You want to go all the way back to the first turret.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart, for a healthier you. Smile Generation. Trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you, committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with Confidence Unleashed.
Baseball's number one digital destination is the MLB app. And this app's got game, like game highlights, live games, fantasy games, and more.
The gem of a game!
This is baseball your way, with stats, scores, breaking news, and daily custom content that hits every time.
A monster shot!
Because here, you choose the teams and pick the players you want to follow.
All year long.
So when they catch it on the field,
what a catch!
You catch it on the MLB app. Download today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
It happened in the middle of that. You see pictures of it in the shipyard afterwards, and it's just a big solid slice, and the second turret is sitting there, but the first turret is completely gone. So yeah, somewhere in the neighborhood of a third of the ship, maybe more like a fourth of the ship, was gone at that point.
How in the world did they keep it afloat, and how did they get it back to a dry dock or to a repair facility?
Well, so it of course has bulkheads in the ship. There was a lot of leakage,
hang on a second,
as you might imagine.
I'm sorry, Corey. Yeah. Let me jump in. A bulkhead would be a wall that would stop the water from sinking the rest of the ship.
That's right. Exactly. Okay. The walls, the vertical walls in the ship, and they definitely had to fight. The surviving sailors had to fight to keep the ship afloat. They used handy dilly pumps, and they work in shoring things up, and even to the point of like pushing mattresses into holes and things like that to keep the vessel afloat. They worked on it for several weeks, hidden against the side of the island in Tulagi, and they actually gathered camouflage netting and foliage to make it look like part of the jungle, if you will. And they went into the jungle and found shoring. They made their own logs out of wood and supported the front end of the ship, and they made a run for Australia of all places to get repairs. And moments into the sailing, they realized that they couldn't go forwards because the front end of the ship looked like a cigar that had been smashed out in an ashtray. Mm. And so they turned around and they went all the way to Australia backwards.
Mm. The battle itself happened at night?
It did. It happened at night. One of the things of the Japanese Navy was feared, especially at night, because they had many skills in fighting naval surface actions at night, and that's when they would resupply, and that's when the battle took place.
So I'm just we're going to pick it up when we come back, Corey. We've got to take a break, but I just want people to understand about the Greatest Generation, and that's what the World War II Museum does so great. It tells that story. It's the middle of the night. You're in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. You get hit by a torpedo. You lose 118 of your shipmates. And now you're tasked with, okay, you got to put all that aside. It's dark, the middle of the Pacific. We're in a battle here, and we're trying to keep the ship afloat. And they managed to do it. Is that about accurate?
That's it. It's your job to survive, and that's what the sailors of the USS New Orleans did.
And I don't know if you know this or not, but the average age would be what, maybe 20-something?
Yeah, about 20-something. There's certainly young men aboard the ship, 17, 18, 19 years old, 20. You're an old man by the time you're 25 when you're in the Navy.
My dad quit high school, and I've told the story before, to go serve in the Pacific, not on the New Orleans, but and had a priest forge his birth certificate so he could join at 16. And I don't think people realize just that the valor that it took, the young people that were making the decisions that they made and showing the courage that they could to make sure the United States won the war. We'll talk about what they discovered with the bow of the New Orleans when we come back. 651, 9 till 7, traffic now, WWL. Graf is our guest. I'm Tommy Tucker, WWL 656, curator, restoration manager for the National World War II Museum. We're talking about the USS New Orleans that had between a third and a fourth of the ship, the bow blown off, but yet managed to make it back to port and did some more fighting in World War II. Tell me what happened recently with finding the bow, Corey.
Yeah, it's kind of an amazing thing. We'd always, at the National World War II Museum, knew we were going to do an exhibit on the USS New Orleans. And so we're in the middle of developing an exhibit, and then we get this news that the bow, which is probably the largest existing piece of the ship, is discovered in Iron Bottom Sound, and it was amazing for us to be able to see those underwater pictures of the bow sitting there on the bottom of Iron Bottom Sound.
There's no way to salvage any of that, right?
Most likely not. It would be considered a war grave. Of course, many sailors went down with the ship, and it's in a relatively protected area. Iron Bottom Sound, of course, Guadalcanal was heavily contested early in the war, and there's many, many sunken shipwrecks there.
This is no less sacred than the USS Alabama at Pearl Harbor, is it?
The USS Alabama is in Mobile, but yeah.
No, wait. What am I talking about? In the tears of the, what am I thinking of at Pearl Harbor?
The Missouri?
Missouri, that's what I'm thinking of. I'm sorry, yes.
Yeah, the Missouri battleship is at Pearl Harbor. No, it is definitely part of our World War II heritage. And, of course, being the USS New Orleans, the city's ship, it's sort of special to the city and Louisiana as well.
People that have had a rough night, maybe they have a toothache, maybe they got this, they got that, they're pacing the floors. I the story you told of the middle of the night, you're 20 years old, all hell breaks loose around you, the third of the ship is blown off, you lose 118 shipmates, and yet, just put it all behind you, keep pushing, that's all you can do. And that's what the World War II Museum does in such great manner, is tell all of the different stories that, boy, just amazingly added up to victory for the United States and the Allies in World War II. What's the timeline on the USS New Orleans exhibit for the National World War II Museum, Corey?
The USS New Orleans exhibit will open sometime next year in 2026. We're looking at the spring or summer. So look for it, and you'll be able to hear the whole history of the ship, not only the Battle of Tassafaronga, but what happens afterwards as well. The New Orleans goes on to fight in almost every major battle in the Pacific in World War II, and is there when the Japanese surrender. Sort of the end of the story is kind of amazing as well. They came back through the Panama Canal, and they got a chance, the sailors and the New Orleans with a new bow got a chance to be the guests of honor at Mardi Gras 1946 right here in New Orleans. So they were parked at the end of Canal Street and went and attended the festivities.
Awesome.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart. For a healthier you, Smile Generation trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with Confidence Unleashed.
When MLB talent takes the field, reactions get loud.
Aaron Judge with a blast.
Oh my God!
Whole scheme.
Struck him out with
102. Laser beam.
Ohtani, inevitable.
Walk off, baby. This is the best.
Witness baseball greatness for yourself at the ballpark. Yeah. Baseball is something else.
Yes.
Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Did you know your credit card points and miles can lose value to inflation while they collect dust? Credit card companies often reduce the redemption value of your points and miles. Imagine a credit card with rewards that can grow in value. With a Gemini credit card, you can earn Bitcoin or one of over 50 other cryptos instantly with no annual fee. Every swipe at the store or gas pump earns you instant rewards deposited straight to your account. Plus, sign up now for a $200 Bitcoin bonus. To kickstart your rewards, visit Gemini.com/card today. Again, if you're looking to invest in Bitcoin but don't know where to start, the Gemini credit card makes it easy. Issued by WebBank, in order to qualify for the $200 crypto intro bonus, you must be approved by June 30th, 2025 and spend $3,000 in your first 90 days. Terms apply. Some exclusions apply to instant rewards in which rewards are deposited when the transaction posts. This content is not investment advice and trading crypto involves risk. For more details on rates, fees, and other Gemini credit card terms, see rates and fees.
On my podcast, Aspire with Emma Greed, we share the keys to succeed in business and in life. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed and Odyssey Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.